Hello, and welcome to Brokenomics. Now, in this episode, we are going to be looking at The Return of the Strong Gods. That is the title of a book by R.R. Reno, which makes a fascinating case. Now, I originally got the book and read it because I thought the title looked quite good and I could see people in our sphere were talking about it. But I started to realise as I read through it that actually there is a really interesting message in this book, and there's a really interesting lens of the way that people can look at the world around them and understand what's going on in society, the language in journalism and politics, and how some adherence to the strong gods, and you can probably guess the type of politicians that I'm talking about, are so at odds with the adherence of the weak gods, which is basically everyone else, the globalists. So we will get into talk about that. Because there's a bit of philosophy in here, the actual book itself, what I found most interesting was the thought processes that it gave me after I had read the book and that I could apply, and I want to talk about some of that as we go. But the book itself is probably less interesting than the message that it leaves you with, because there's a lot of history in there about how we got to that. There's a lot of philosophical discussion, because of course it is a counter to the open society written by a philosopher called Karl Popper. Now, I have studied a little bit of philosophy, but not that much. But luckily, we have an actual proper philosopher on the payroll.
Hello.
Sorry. Stelios, welcome to the show, Stelios. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you very much. It's the first Brokenomics that we are doing together. We've done one with Callum and Harry.
Ah, yes.
What's an economy for?
Yes.
And your answer was to provide for the eternal boomers.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
It did sort of come down to that, didn't it? Yes. So welcome to your
thank
first...
Thank you very much. Very pleased to be here.
One-on-one Brokenomics. Thank you for coming on. Because, of course,
Thank you for having me.
A slight tangent. Your symposium series has come to an end, isn't it? Because you are working on our super secret project that we can't talk about.
What project?
It is so secret.
This conversation never happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
Conversation?
Yes, and which means that we can occasionally pull you in a little bit more now in that situation. I'm not allowed to work on the super secret project because I don't have the requisite skills in cybernetic armor or whatever it is that we're working on.
You know, I'm a bit worried now. How did the secret project?
Well, you know,
the thing
that we can't talk. Anyway, enough about that. Anyway, Stelios has got some fantastic stuff coming down the track. But we are. Point of order: we are continuing Brokenomics because I'm not allowed to work on the cybernetic arm or whatever it is that we've got going on. So yes. So you are familiar, of course, with Karl Popper and his Open Society.
Yes.
This book is
very much so.
I love the lens that it gives, and let's explain the core premise of the book, and then you can pick apart the justification which he used to get to this, because it is basically a repudiation of Karl Popper's Open Society. That's a name that a lot of viewers might know, because of course George Soros based his institution on, well, he named it after Karl Popper's Open Society. So it gives you some sort of prelude as to what the mindset of those type of people are. So yeah, first of all, you know, what are the strong gods? Basically, they're ideas, aren't they? They're essentially ideas. So strong gods are things like, I don't know, love, truth, faith, family, father, nation, all those sort of things are strong. What he frames as strong gods. And the weak gods are, well, sort of weaker versions of that. So you might say things like, instead of truth, meaning. Instead of faith, skepticism. Words like diversity, equity, inclusion, identity, all of these kind of things. And these gods, they can have, it's a bit broader than ideas, but these gods can have light versions and they can have dark versions. So the light weak god that I like is something like innovation.
Okay.
I like that. I think that's important.
I like it too.
Yes. But
why is it weak? Because normally, you know, someone would ask that.
Yes.
Whether societies that are very stagnant would be very very weak themselves. And you see in every period in history, those who were more technologically advanced, in which case those who were more open to innovation, they sort of dominated the least.
Yes, I suppose you're right. The author doesn't really frame it as strong gods versus weak gods. That's more the spin that I'm putting on it. He definitely talks about the strong gods, which are those robust ideas which are making a return. Thus the return of the strong gods. He tends to frame the opposite to that as being openness.
Yes.
So I'm kind of characterizing them as the weak gods. But you know, that's just a framing that I kind of prefer. These gods, they can have their light and dark versions. And we come back into a minute as obviously the dark versions of the strong gods, which gave rise to this whole situation. But the weak gods, they are essentially, they're like acids, they're solvents. They're things that, you know, dilute truth rather than concentrate it. They lead to the breakup of, well, everything. Society. I mean, anyone who looks around at the world today will see that our culture, the family, everything is being dissolved all around us as we adhere to this. So yes, let's first cover. Go ahead.
I think a way to frame what the author was saying, and I must say I haven't read the entire book, but I think I've got a fair idea of what the author says. If I'm wrong, I'm open to be convinced otherwise and to be told I'm wrong. So he said at some point that there are three Fs that are really important, really strong gods. And he said it's faith, flag, and family. So when he's talking about the distinction that he's drawing between strong and weak gods, saying that weak gods are the gods that govern the world right now and govern our Western cultures, let's say, it seems to me that he's talking about a kind of moral degradation, a moral crisis. And within that moral crisis, we identify people who are behaving in immoral ways. Some people who would be more theologically inclined would say a bit more degenerate. And what we see in those, in these people, is that they seem to act in a way that doesn't seem to have any sort of motivation we would traditionally call a noble one.
No foundation behind it, yeah.
Exactly. So for instance, coming back to faith, flag, and family, you could say that a lot of people engage in action from different motives. So for instance, something like engaging in economic activity in order to raise your family and your family's standard of living is something that presumably would be a behavior that is, that comes forth, that springs from a strong god. Whereas he would say that just amassing a fortune just in order to indulge all your private vices would be something moving like a weak, from a weak god. Because traditionally you would say that motivation that springs only from baser instincts is strong, is less like that. And also, when he talks, for instance, about the flag, I think he's talking about patriotism. And he says that a lot of people right now come to see patriotism as a dirty word, and they sort of think that any kind of love for their country is bad. He would say that this is a strong god, whereas he would say, I think Rusty Reno, the author, would say that, for instance, acting in order to improve your society and your country is acting from a strong god.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, that is his case. Yeah, I mean, he lays out his core argument in sort of the first hour or so, and then the rest of it is largely a sort of history as to how we got to this point and various examples that build it up. But yeah, it is absolutely a fair assessment of what he's saying. Let's quickly recap on how this situation came to be, how it came to be, because it is very much the post-war consensus. That emerged. There was a time pre-1945 where the strong gods were very much in ascendancy, things like flag and family and faith. Yes, all of those are sort of very much in ascendancy and very much ruled. Truth was truth, you know, nation, love, all of those things were respected and upheld values. We didn't get into this question everything, skepticism everything until that point. And he identifies that the trauma of the Second World War was such that we were, as a society, we were able to be shaken out of those fundamental bedrock beliefs.
Yes.
The motivations of many of the characters in the Second World War were motivating strong gods. They were a belief in race and people and all of those things. He characterises them as a dark version of the strong gods. So he's not making an argument that you just need to embrace the strong gods alone.
Yeah, he doesn't speak in an unqualified manner.
Yes. Yeah. There is balance for both openness and the strong gods. But essentially, the post-war consensus was so traumatised by this experience that it can be all boiled down to, we must do whatever it takes to make sure that there is never another moustache man again. That is essentially, and you can see this manifest all the time today. The criticism of Trump, it goes straight to that, doesn't it? It goes straight to, oh, he's another Hitler.
I mean, if we think of leftists, they sort of abuse the term fascist.
Yes, but the thing is, it's not just leftists today. It's Tory prime ministers who are doing it.
Yes.
It's Republican members of Congress who are employing this language. Not Trump, but some of the other Republican, he gives example of other Republican presidents who have employed this language of openness and this
sort of virtue signaling towards the international order.
Yeah, well, I mean, he makes the point that Western politicians, with a couple of notable exceptions, such as Viktor Orban and Trump, no Western politician can even make an argument as to why you should have a border, a national border. Because this cult of openness at any cost and this rejection of any and all strong beliefs, everything has to be relative. You have to be sceptical of everything. You need to question everything. You need to be open to any and all perversities, has reached such a point as to make any argument of belief, nation, family, any of it, is something that even supposedly right-wing politicians cannot do, because their mental software is running on this pantheon of weak gods.
Yes. So here there is a very interesting conversation that opens up, and it's a very complex one. And you can definitely see traces of Karl Popper's and also Friedrich Hayek's work here and criticism of the society that we're in at the time. So it seems to me that when we're talking about openness and closeness, it's very important to say specifically what we mean. Now, there has been a sort of misrepresentation of rationality, discussion, discourse, when it comes to the public sphere, because there's this idea that somehow, if you are open to reason, you won't have to draw a red line at some point. This is mistaken, because just think of an argument. You have some premises and you have a conclusion. There are very few people who would constantly ask you why. So even if you're open to argumentation and open to discourse, you will have to stop at some point. You will have to draw your red lines.
Yes. And we don't do it. In modern society, we don't have any red lines.
The problem that we don't do it, I think, has to do with a kind of moral lack, with a kind of skepticism that is generalized. And a generalized skepticism comes from all sorts of, oozes from all sorts of springs. Mm-hmm. But I would say, culturally speaking, that there is a sort of hesitation with respect to saying that this is moral, this is immoral.
Well,
we have sort of reached the place where we think that sort of moral criticism, which traditionally speaking, you could say in a strong God framework, would be seen as part and parcel of being a human being and part and parcel of growing within a society. It has come now to be seen as a sort of rejection of someone's autonomy. And I would say that this is an entire, complete abuse of terminology, but this is the situation we're in. I'm not going to say we're not.
Well,
we're
situation. Very much on the slippery slope, aren't we? You know, I when I was a young man, gay marriage was something that was considered just completely outside the bounds. And even Joe Biden, and you can watch speeches of him back in the sort of 80s where he was railing against the idea of gay marriage. Even Barack Obama was against gay marriage until he was for it. And then that came along. And when that was in the process of coming into being, transgenderism was still something that was ridiculed. You can go and watch, you know, the end of Jim Carrey's Pet Detective, or Ace Ventura Pet Detective, I think it was. And one of the final scenes of that is a transsexual is uncovered. And you've got all this row of police officers just throwing up all around it.
Yes.
You know, and that would be complete. And here we are, you know, each time you pass a barrier, the previous barriers just get knotted down one by one. And, you know, I used to wonder whether something like paedophilia would be something that would be one of the next barriers to go. Now I know it's simply a matter of time until we get there, because we kind of have to. Because our society is incapable of drawing a line at any point, of putting any condemnation in anything. And anything that is rejected today, it's just a question of when.
Here is a very interesting point of contention, but I think we can have a very respectable debate here.
Sure, go ahead.
Because I think that this is actually really interesting. And I use it in interesting in the positive sense, because I've also heard that in some cases in the UK, the term interesting is used in a sort of meh way.
Right.
I use it in the positive sense. Okay. First of all, let's start with a parenthesis. I really think that no one could shoot Silence of the Lambs right now.
Well, many films.
It would be considered very offensive.
Yep.
Close parenthesis. Now, you said something very interesting. That we have come to a place where it is the society that accepts this. Now, I'm willing to entertain the idea that it's not so much the society that accepts this, but it is something that Western states are enforcing it upon society. So, for instance, I frequently listen to people who say that our society is incredibly tolerant and it tolerates things to a ridiculous extent, things like transgenderism, etc. Mm. I really have the impression that this isn't the case, not because there aren't people supporting it, but because there hasn't been any debate. It's also the same thing that people say, for instance, about...
Yes, good point.
There hasn't been any debate. It is more something, an agenda that is imposed top down by politicians who are sort of who see themselves more as members of supranational organizations like the UN or the EU.
Yes.
And they don't care about the people. And I'll give you an example on what happened to Greece lately and show you why I wouldn't say that this is a failure of open society. A lot of people say it is, but I would say that this is precisely a sort of Machiavellian, in a bad sense, because I like Machiavelli a lot on a lot of things he says. I think you can't understand the world without reading him. I'll give you an example. So there was a sort of, the current government right now was voted by a lot of people who are identifying as center-right or right-wing.
And this is in Greece, is it?
In Greece. Yeah. And they put forward a same-sex marriage proposal that opens up the possibility of same-sex couples adopting kids.
Okay.
Now, the overwhelming majority of people don't want this. And the justification for it, a debate didn't happen. A good debate didn't happen. This is you need a prolonged period where you debate this. So society warms up a bit. And the prime minister that we have went out and said that we need to protect individuals against the tyranny of the majority. For me, this is the exact opposite. This is the tyranny of the minority. And I can explain why in a nutshell. Don't worry, I'm not going to say things. So let's say that I'm neither pro nor against it. I want to think about it. And especially when there are children involved, there is a pool of data that we can have with respect to how same-sex couples affect the children they adopt from other countries. So the question is, if that is the case, why should we rush to just impose that law? And a lot of people from the ruling party are absolutely spineless. They say to their voters individually, they say, I didn't want to vote it, but I would be cancelled from the party if I wouldn't vote for it. And I think, to be fair to them, that's true. But it also doesn't address the question that they didn't act as they should. So the question is there, if you are in favor of the open society and you want debate and you want all this, you need to have some time. You need to have some time, you need to engage in a debate, and you also need to not penalize dissenters. None of this happened. They just imposed that thing in order to virtue signal to the group of politicians in the international organizations that they want. That is why I hesitate to say that a lot of the things that we say should be blamed upon society rather than upon people who are...
That is a fair correction. So I agree with AA that culture is downstream of law.
Okay.
Law comes first and it says, you know, you must accept these things on pain of whatever. And then culture sort of has to catch up with that rather reluctantly. Because, you know, otherwise you're going to get, well, arrested or censured or fined or something like that. You know, an example on the transgender thing that we were talking about just now is we are not allowed to mock it on the podcast or even on this, because this is the first bit of the show that goes out on YouTube, because they will take our channel away from us.
Yeah.
If we question any of this stuff too much. So, you know, you're right. There is no debate. It is simply the rule of the elite says this is now a thing. You are not allowed to debate it. You are not allowed to discuss it. And eventually, after it's been a thing long enough and people haven't been allowed to have the debate, well, it's a thing.
Yep.
So quite.
And to add to the tragedy of this, just a small thing, yep. Look at the double standards. In some cases, laws do create culture. Mm. But in other cases, you have people who don't enforce laws. So we are at a tragic situation where, for instance, we enforce laws that are unjust
yes.
and unpopular, and we don't enforce basic laws that have to do with basic safety of our societies.
Well, take any Western country at the moment. They do not enforce their border.
Yeah.
They know that they can't get rid of the laws saying that there are national borders. They know they can't go that far because there'd be too much repudiation. So instead, they simply don't enforce those laws.
Yeah.
Whereas newer laws... such as whatever the current issue that they're trying to push, whatever societal acid they're trying to splash in our faces, you know, those will be enforced very, very rigorously. So I mean, I keep seeing examples of them putting these rainbow crossings across roads, and then invariably people go out and paint over them.
Yeah.
You know, that they throw a huge amount of resources into making sure they track down the perpetrators of the people who painted over the transgender crossings, whereas they spare no resources to secure borders or, you know, whatever else, grooming gangs or whatever it may be. So, no, agreed on that. Should we talk about the origins of how we got into this? Because that is something that the book covers very much, which is, so we talked about how after 1945, the West was traumatized by the events of the Second World War. There was this idea that the strong gods of, like you said, faith, family, flag, were responsible. It's people just believed in stuff too strongly. And there was a highly influential book, which I mentioned earlier, The Open Society, written by Karl Popper in 1945. To give it its full name, The Open Society and Its Enemies. As mentioned, that is the name of George Soros's organisation, which is today, he was so influenced by this book that he now has an organisation which goes around funding the races of very left-wing DAs in blue cities, because he can have maximum effect on the population there. And I'll let you, because you're the expert on this, I'll let you describe it better than me, but just to frame this up, the open society, as I understand it, it is an attack on the tenets of the pre-1945 society, of the things that we used to believe. So it was an attack on, you know, Plato, Hegel, Marx, all of those type of thinkers, because those thinkers, in Popper's mind, were describing truths that were not falsifiable, and therefore these were inadmissible. And of course, moral claims are not falsifiable. Religious views are not falsifiable. And therefore you need to reject all of those and replace them with this critical thinking. Have I got that roughly right?
Okay, so let's untangle it.
Yes.
So Popper was initially a philosopher of science. I think he was born in 1902 in Austria, if I'm not mistaken.
That sounds
right. And he died in 1994 or 1995. I think that's about right. He was initially a philosopher of science, and he was at the time reacting against the logical positivists, who were influenced by Hume, major figure of the Scottish Enlightenment. And the logical positivists had a sort of disastrous stance towards morality. And they had this principle, how was it called? The verification principle. And they said that for a statement to be meaningful, it needs to be empirically verifiable. So the question is there, you know, how can you verify moral claims? Well, you cannot. There's literally no amount of empirical observation that can ground your moral claim. Mm. So they said that morality is just a sort of emotive thing. It's just, morality is an objective. It's sort of like an expression of your beliefs.
Okay, so somebody might say incest is immoral.
Yes.
They would say, as the Twitter lefties do today, give me your source for that. And you could say, well, I haven't got a study on it. I just know it's immoral.
I think it's worse than that. They would literally say it's meaningless. That the expression means, I don't like this.
Right.
That's the general stance. Now, Popper comes along and he says that this is a mistaken principle. You need to say that for a statement to be scientific, it needs to be falsifiable. But to be a bit fair to him, he wasn't so much prepared to just throw away morality. He didn't have this kind of scientism that the logical positivists had, saying that science can account you for everything. I don't know exactly his morals, how they fit into how he was thinking about it, but he isn't thought of as an ethical philosopher so much. Mm. Now, when it comes to the open society, I wouldn't say that the open society is necessarily a rejection of all that came before, because a lot of the things came before him, but it is certainly a rejection against rigidity. So, to the extent that the strong gods, as you are mentioning them, and Rastorino mentions them there, to the extent that they involve rigidity, Popper would more or less be inclined to be against them. So we need to bear in mind two things, though, that when someone says I'm in favor of, for instance, the open society, they're not necessarily saying that I'm in favor of this or that value. You could say they value openness.
But it's more of a process, isn't it?
It's more of a process, yes. It's more of a procedural value.
Yes.
You could have advocates of an open society who are nationalistic and those who are globalist.
Yes, so that is an interesting point. So one of the arguments that R. Arino makes in this book is that this openness has been embraced by both sides of the political spectrum.
Yes.
So most disastrously with the left, because it is to dissolve all societal bonds.
Yeah, it's just to destroy stuff.
But the right's version of embracing this would be things like unfettered free markets.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.